5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hola, and welcome to episode 13 of the SF in Translation podcast. I'm Rachel Cordasco.
And I'm Daniel Hauser.
This episode will include news and updates from March 1st through March 28th. And I hope everybody will forgive me for my froggy voice. I may be sick, I may just have allergies, but there it is. So maybe I really sound a lot better than I did this morning, I must say.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. This morning at work, people were like avoiding me like the plague. Like, what's wrong with you?
Well, they were also probably afraid because we're recording here on April Fool's Day. And so they thought you were going to pull a Poisson d'Avril on them or something.
You know, that reminds me, I have decided to, I'm so bad at this. I was going to make some terrible April Fool's joke, and like, I can't even think of one.
You're trying to pull the wool over my eyes, son?
Like, I was trying to think of something like some, you know, super rich person has decided to like take the podcast and like,
and support us for life.
Yeah, I know, something like that. Like,
you
know,
all
like,
of our translation needs. Yeah.
April Fool's.
That's the harsh thing about this day.
Exactly. I really actually hate when people fool me.
Particularly when it's like thriving on your hopes and dreams.
Right, right. Well, anyway, it's almost over. So yeah, you've been good? You've been reading?
Yeah, I caught up back onto things by going through the short stories from November and December and getting through the March ones. So it's been a busy month for me.
Yeah, that was great. You just like sent me so much stuff. It's all up on the website, all of your reviews of the short fiction, like you said, November, December, and March. And, you know, it's really great because I use those, like, I think I've told you before, I use those to then pull out kind of little blurby things to put on the, SFT on the web page on the site.
Right.
To just kind of explain, like, what each story is about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I basically steal from you.
Hopefully I get all the information right from my reads.
Because I literally have just finished reading a couple stories from March. It's just so much to read that...
There's been a lot, yeah. And a lot came towards the end of the month, too.
Yeah, don't you love when that happens?
Yes.
It's like, thanks, guys. Well, first, as usual, let's talk about some books. You've got the Croatian collection Mars. Is it still on the way or do you have it already?
I don't have it on hand yet, but I got an email from the publisher that was on the way for review. So my intent is to write that review for Speculative Fiction and Translation.
Very nice. So exciting. I, you know, from the story that I read in World Lit today and that you read, you know, back in January, if the stories are like that kind of horror, surreal horror. I think it's going to be good. Do you know how to pronounce the author's name? Is it Asha Bakic or something?
That sounds close to what I'd imagined it to be. Yeah. But I don't know for certain. I'll have to look into it more before I read the whole collection. But yeah, if it's the rest of it's anything like that one, just the like the complexity of it and the beauty of the writing, I'm excited about it. So
yeah,
and I'm excited the publisher was able to get us a copy to be able to share.
Yeah, that was really nice. Feminist Press does a lot of great stuff.
Yes.
Okay, so the book that kind of showed up suddenly in the out this month March post on the site was The Wisdom of the Dead by Rodolfo Martinez, and he translated it from the Spanish, and it's out from Sportula. And this is the first novel of his from his series called The Lost Files of Sherlock Holmes. And Rodolfo sent me the manuscript and said, I translated this. Could you edit it and make sure that, you know, the English is fine and everything? So I had the distinct honor of being the first, one of the first people to read it in English. It was very fun. And I didn't really have to change, you know, I didn't even need to do that many revisions. And within a little while, he got it out there, and now I have a couple copies of it. So if you would like a copy.
Oh, cool.
I could send it to you. It's great.
Yeah, that would be wonderful to read through, too. I'm reading a sort of mashup between sci-fi fantasy and mystery right now that I'm going to do for the Skiffy and Fanty BookTube.
Oh.
And so, which I get to record tomorrow. But now reading that, I'm kind of on a little kick of those that combine mystery and horror. And so from what I'm looking at here, going through the link from the from your March in translation page on the website, the speculative fiction translation site, the link says that this kind of combines the Sherlock Holmes mythology along with Lovecraftian mythology,
yes.
Which is an interesting combination that I'm surprised maybe it exists, but I've not heard of it before.
And let me tell you, he does it so well.
Cool.
He is. And the Wisdom of the Dead has actually, I didn't know this when I was reading the English version. The Wisdom of the Dead has been translated into multiple languages already.
Hmm.
And it's sold around the world. And now he said, the irony is that it came out in English like after five other languages.
Right. Yeah. Sadly, that's often the case, I think.
Yeah. Exactly. But Rodolfo is the author of Cat's World, which is considered the first Spanish work of cyberpunk. And I think it came out in the 90s. And, you know, he's definitely well-established, well-known around the world, hopefully getting better known in the United States and at least the Anglophone world. And this was just, it's great. He really does a great job. And, you know, he said, what do you think about the style of, you know, Wood Holmes and Watson? You know, did I do a good job capturing their voices? And as someone who's read every single Sherlock Holmes story and seen lots of different iterations of it, you know, in movies and film and TV and stuff, I think he does a really great job of capturing it. I mean, he's a different writer than Conan Doyle, obviously, but he's got that right amount of kind of cynicism and just very hard to explain, like Sherlock Holmes, that kind of detachment,
mm-hmm.
yet intensity, and Watson's kind of, you know, bewilderment. I mean, it's so great. I highly recommend it. So. Yeah, I'll remind me to send you one of my copies.
Okay, will do. Yeah, looking forward to that.
So that was the only novel out, but, you know, of course, Mars and...
The Ha-Ha Hoo-Hoo.
The Ha-Ha Hoo-Hoo from Penguin India. I wonder if we could even get anything from... Like, is it possible to get something from Penguin India sent to the U.S.?
Well, actually, that's a conversation I want to have a little later, if possible. Here.
Perfect.
In a sort of like new little segment, I guess. So we'll try it out in just a little bit.
That sounds good. So since you are the short story reader extraordinaire for the SF in Translation site, I thought we could talk about what some of our favorite short stories, because there were a lot.
There were several, yes.
Yes, what our favorites were. And I figured we could start with you.
Okay. So, well, the ones you identified on... the little write-up sheet that we have in prepping this, I would agree were really among my favorites as well, or the ones I found most interesting. This month, there was no one story that kind of really blew me away or stood out as being like the real showstopper.
Mm-hmm.
But these three that you mentioned were definitely also the ones that, for various reasons, hit me the hardest, and that's Holes. Which, of course, obviously then you translated. Meteors and Lord of Rivers. Silesia, also, if I'm saying that correctly, that came out in Samovar just a few days prior to the end of March. I really enjoyed that one as well. So that was the only one that wasn't on the list that you had indicated that I also found particularly noteworthy.
Let's talk about Silesia.
Yeah. Okay.
I stopped about a third of the way through.
Okay.
I couldn't finish it.
Right. That's my one criticism of it, is that it is long. And I don't know as it really needs to be as long as it is.
Oh, but it is so disturbing. I couldn't, I mean.
Oh, okay. I had no problem with that,
Oh,
but
I was horrifically disturbed by it. I mean, it said on Samovar's site, they say, click to see the
right.
content warnings. And the list is like a mile
Mile
long.
long, yes.
And it's all of that. It is all of that. It was,
Well, and today in
ugh.
class we discussed a classic story by Octavia Butler that had a similar list of trigger warnings probably associated with it as well.
What it's got something to do with children, like bad things being done to children. I cannot handle it. And that's probably, I feel like that having children and like if I didn't, like before I had children, it didn't like hit me as hard as it does now. So that's probably just like my own. I mean, it was well written, but it was starting to get real, like when they start talking about like molesting children, I was like, I gotta stop.
The incestuous, yeah,
Can't
relationships
deal.
and
Oh, it's horrible. Yeah. But like I said, the writing is great. Kind of what made you think that it was one of the ones that stood out?
I'd like the blending between sort the language was very rich and descriptive, and so I really enjoyed that. I liked that even though it dealt with very dark and awful things, it never felt gratuitous
Yeah.
and how it handled that to me. And so if you can get past the sort of things, just the simple fact that they're there, it's not dealt with in a particularly nasty manner, I didn't think. And I liked the balance that it had between reading almost like a classical historical piece of fiction, like something you might find in Jane Austen,
Yeah.
but then being really dark and horrific as well. I also just liked the theme of it because it's a theme that resonates with me, I think, is of people being blind to evils. Or being indifferent to evils because of that's just the thing that is done, or for some other reason that they consider more noble or important, like the importance of family. And I think that's a very real thing that humans do all the time,
Yeah.
whether it be institutions or families or individuals or companies, that a blind eye is given, or excuses are made, or cover-ups are made. Without recognizing, even though you realize how absolutely horrible this is, you just kind of shrug your shoulders and say, oh, well, that's the way it is.
Right.
And so this story I liked for just the way it handled those themes, I guess, and that it was a slow build to the actual, to the supernatural kind of horror, at least.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, I don't know the difference between, I've always said, okay, something's Portuguese and it's from Brazil, but this is specifically called out as being Southern Brazilian Portuguese, translated from that. And so that's very interesting. I would love to know more about what distinguishes Brazilian Portuguese from Portugal Portuguese. And I know some people that I can ask, but, this definitely was something that brought up, something very specific, like Spanish. Mexican Spanish is different from Argentine Spanish and Chilean Spanish, and those are all very different and very interesting conversations.
And then here you also have characters where there's big class differences.
Yes,
And I'm
yes.
curious how much of a language difference there is between just the classes as well, not just a regional dialect, but a dialect or argot between the ruling class as opposed to the worker class, as it were.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, let's stick with Samovar. I know that the Knack Bomb by Beau Balder was a reprint.
Yes. And so I had originally put it on my list to cover. And then as I began looking at it, it seemed that it was maybe originally written in English, but then translated into Dutch for Samovar.
Yeah, it was Dutch first and then translated into English. And it was originally published in a different magazine a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm. In English.
In English, right.
Okay. So I just missed that detail. So I ended up not reading it or reviewing it as a result. At least not yet, but I might be able to get it for April.
I must say that I saw that it was long and I didn't know if, you know, I would have the time to put into it, but I just started reading like the first paragraph. And Beau Balder has stories everywhere. I mean, her stuff is just everywhere, but I don't usually take the time to read it because she writes originally in English now, I think, mostly. But I read it and I just love it.
Oh, cool.
I love it so much. You have to read it. It's just so great. It's definitely, I don't know, I guess a knack. You know, maybe if I was translating it, I might not use the word knack because does that seem like the kind of word, like someone has a knack for something, you know?
Right.
But I don't know if it works as an adjective, but like a knack bomb. I don't know. I'm just, the title, I was kind of like, there's another title here, but, you know, whatever. It's still a great story because somehow people are able to throw these knack bombs that give people like the power to do something amazing. You know, like if you get hit by one of these knack bombs, suddenly you are a brilliant, you know, designer and everything you do looks gorgeous, or you're mildly good looking and you get hit by a knack bomb and suddenly you are just, all you have to do is just look at someone and they instantly fall in love. And, you know, I mean, it's like, it's a fun kind of story, but it's written so, it's got such energy. And such a style of just kind of, it's funny, but it's kind of, it's unique. Like, I love stories like that, that are just so full of energy and funny and, you know, and weird. You know, there's no horror in it at all, I have to say. Too much horror gets to me.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll be curious to see how that works for me because I'm always skeptical of novellas. I find I'd rather them be shorter or I'd rather them be a novel. And so there's definitely ones I love and adore. But as a general rule, the majority end up being I decide I'd rather it be one or the other. And it begins to annoy me if it's not. So.
Well, let me tell you, I translated a 16,000 word story from the Italian. It falls into no category. It's 16,000 words. I told you about it. It's the horror, surreal fantasy noir. It's like, you know, it's like that odd, you know, length. And it is hard finding a home for it. Like I'm trying, I'm still working on it. I've sent it many places, but I'm going to keep sending it. And I have to say, it is so different and so interesting, but nobody likes that length, at least in US magazines. People just don't like it, even though they say they accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they publish some of it, but it just seems very hard to even find someone who accepts it. You know what I mean?
A harder sell, yeah.
And it's that strange length, because if you read a book, you're kind of mentally preparing yourself. Like, I'm going to read this book. It's going to be long. And if it's a story, you say, okay, it's a short story. I can read it on my phone. But if you start reading something on your phone and it turns out that it's long, you know, then you could kind of like, oh my God, you know, and then it is, yeah. So I know, but there's something about some stories just are that length and I don't really know where they belong. I guess online or...
Online certainly should work easier, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, remember, did you ever read Memory by Teresa Mera de Echevarria, I think is how you pronounce her name, Argentinian writer?
Not that I recall.
Yeah, it was translated by Lauren Schimmel, let's see, maybe 3 years ago, and Upper Rubber Boot Press put it out as a standalone novella, like printed standalone novella, and is very interesting.
Wow. I didn't think anybody except Tor.com was doing that, but
Right?
yeah.
I mean, it was fascinating, but yeah, that's what they did, and it was worth it. It's a fabulous story about Mars and Martian culture and family structures, and she's the also the one who wrote Terpsichore or Terpsichore. It was in Strange Horizons a couple of years ago. Her stuff is just great. So yeah, that was an interesting, very rare thing, for someone to publish something like that. And I wanted to thank you for the nice things you said about about holes.
Yeah, so tell me about holes.
Yes, so Clelia Ferris has just she writes around so many different kinds of science fiction. Like she'll do science fiction, but some will be sci-fi fantasy, some will be sci-fi horror, some will be just kind of a mix of a lot of things. And Holes is just a short, surreal piece about I was kind of picturing, those that artists use where it's like a figure, like a wooden figure of a like a human figure, and you can move the joints and stuff.
Right.
I was thinking that the narrator of Holes was kind of like that, only white and like an android, but it's totally like, the surface is totally opaque, and apparently humanity has evolved like so far that humans aren't even on Earth anymore. They left this android behind. And he gets the ability, or it gets the ability to get holes, punctures in its surface.
Through spam is what I love, effectively, yeah.
Through spam, exactly. Through a spam email. And the feelings that come through, the movement from, oh, look, that's a lamp, to, I feel the presence of that lamp. And the light hitting my eyes, like that gulf that people talk about not being able to bridge between human and machine, she goes backwards from machine to human.
Right, an awakening of
An
senses.
awakening, exactly. And the really challenging thing here was a lot of the lines she has like a line here and then a line there and a line there where she'll have like a set of synonyms. So a whole like five different word Italian words that all mean the same basic thing. And when I saw that, I was like, oh no. This is gonna be really hard. But it's yeah, it was basically trying to find five English synonyms for the same basic idea, but also each synonym corresponding to the correct Italian word. And I worked with her on it, and it was great. It's wonderful being able to work with the author and go back and forth. Like, is this the word you meant? Is this what you meant? And we're so grateful that World Literature Today published it, and she really needs to be known more. I talk about Clelia a lot.
There was something else you just recently translated by her as well, right?
Yeah, that was in December's Future Science Fiction Digest.
Right, which I also really loved.
So what kind of sense do you get of Clelia? Because I'm always like yelling from the rooftops about how much I love her, but I always like to hear other people's impressions.
I'd have to go back and compare the two stories like directly because they're too divorced in my mind right now.
Yeah, they're also extremely different. Yeah.
That too, but that's not a bad thing to me. It, in my mind, I know enough of her now to have read at least those two stories and know that I really like them both. And so that makes me want to read more. So I do recall, I have no recollection off the top of my head. I'd have to look at my notes of what the other story was in Future Science Fiction Digest. I remember liking that one more as a story. This one I enjoyed and appreciated more for what it isn't as opposed to what it is, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, I liked the ambiguity that this story has in it of sort of like, what is this program giving it holes? Are these holes really physical, or are they something else that kind of manifests as feeling physical to the to this robot? What is the gender at the end of it all, or is there not one? So I really like that ambiguity, but it made the story harder to sort of get into at the beginning to try to just figure out like what the heck is going on here. But at the end, and after reading it and rereading it, it became richer. The other one I remember being more straightforward and kind of cool concepts and cool themes that I liked.
Yeah, the other one, The Substance of Ideas, is...
Oh, yes, that's right. Title made it click.
Yeah, the kibbutz and the people who discover these strange kind of sea creatures like within like a... under a hill. There's kind of like a little watery area.
The remains of what might be a ship or a cave. And
yeah, it's like a cave that they call a ship.
Mm-hmm.
And they find these sea creatures that if you eat the eggs of these basically sea urchins, they look like pincushions. And so that's why they're called pincushions. And if you eat the eggs, you know, this the myth that this one character kind of puts together is, you eat it and you imbibe the special amino acid that has been kind of cooking in these pincushions for millennia, you know, because they had nothing to do sitting there in the cave but think about things. And so they thought, and now they've produced these eggs. And so you eat the eggs. And then you get the wise thoughts. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you become wise, and you become, you know, like you have amazing ideas. Except the problem is they're addictive,
right?
So
drugs,
yeah.
So no, I love the speculative biology in that one. Yeah, and in this one, I actually reacted negatively to it earlier on because of the use of the word evolution. And
yes.
So I'm curious what that was in the original Italian, or if it was a direct evolution, or if there's a difference between the word used in a scientific sense or in a general sense of the language. Because in English, people use the word evolution to just mean change, which it does in the vernacular, but biologically, that's not a definition. And so, like, when the two end up getting confused, as a biologist, I prickle.
That's a good point.
Though I understand why it occurs, but it you know, I have that reaction then. But it made me curious how it was in the story. Was there a biological connection kind of being made, or is it just simply using that word in this as a synonym for change?
To me, it was a synonym for change.
Okay.
Because evolution sounds so much cooler than change.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Right? <Of course. laughs> The word is just so, yeah.
To some extent, it's a distinction between evolution with a lowercase a.
Exactly.
And with a capital, yeah.
Right. So you also liked The Lord of Rivers, which...
Yes.
I loved. What did you particularly like about that one?
What I liked about that one was that the sort of alternation between time of following the intelligent Beijing West Station module, artificial intelligence that's sort of monitoring human behavior to watch out for potential dangers and communicate them to humans, watching its progression through the years as humanity kinds of changes, and then also it changes, juxtaposed with these segments that are contrapuntal in the sense that they actually the two are communicating with what it was and what this AI ends up being now. And at first, it's unclear what the sort of future section is, like how it relates, but then becomes increasingly clear. And so the future section kind of is happening at the heat death of the universe, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
As, you know, the last bits of biological species out there are dealing with this fact that the universe is ending. So I like that concept of taking the idea of a human AI that outlives humanity on Earth, that then becomes, still has a role. And I've seen that idea used before in stories, but never to the extreme that it was here. And it's an example of a story. When I started reading it, I was kind of like getting impatient of, okay, why is this so long? And then I began to understand why. And so when things that I think are overly long, then I actually begin to appreciate them. That often makes me like them even more.
Yeah, I agree. I love the long time span. You know, I like when they say, oh, well, you know, we finally reached the point where everything is just, it's expanded so much and everything's just dying. But Daniel, I was wondering if you could explain the ending to me. Because I was very confused. So the AI has obviously over the millennia developed a higher level of intelligence than it even had, you know, when it started as a quantum computer. So when the travelers that found it, you know, I guess they activated it. Is that what they did, or they?
I don't remember them activating. I thought it was still active when they arrived,
but then when they left.
I could easily be forgetting details.
Well, when the visitors left in a hurry, I know what it was. The AI said that it was going, that the visitors had found a whole bunch of code for restarting the universe, like rebooting it.
Right, and it's sort of metaphysical in a large extent. I mean, it's not like hard science, but at least not that I'm aware of this metaphysical idea of somehow restarting the universe or rebooting the universe, that things are cyclic in nature. But it's, if I remember correctly, the survivors that were still around don't want to just restart it willy-nilly. They want to restart it where there's still a memory of, where there's a continuation from what it is currently. And if I remember correctly, somehow the AI has some kind of way of doing that, but it's more of a compromise. It's not wholly what they want, but it achieves at least some aspects of that. But beyond that, I don't actually remember.
Yeah, I got the sense that the survivors just, they realized that the Lord of Rivers AI was going to actually try.
Yes. And it was going to do what was best really for existence. Is
right.
The sense that I got. Oh, not so necessarily great. Just what they wanted. But I'm not 100% sure on that interpretation or my memory. But in the end, too, I didn't really care about the ending because it was the journey to that point that really had me most interested, honestly.
It was so great. That is definitely one of my favorites of the month. So once again, that was The Lord of Rivers by Wang Shang Feng Yang, translated from the Chinese by Nathan Ferries in Future Science Fiction Digest number 2.
And so the final one then is of note, at least, is Meteors by Clara Wing, translated from the Indonesian by Tony Pollard.
Yes, I like the Meteors.
And so I enjoyed this one because it seemed so simple. It was another one of those stories that seemed so simple, but then as you read it, you realized what the challenges were in terms of the translation. Kind of like with yours with Holes, you got the sense that it was something really challenging to translate, and then you sort of had a respect for the translation job that was done to do what it did, to get those nuances in there. And this was another one where the nuances also then ended up impacting gender as well, even more so. And it didn't totally capture it for me, because not until after I'd sort of reading the story behind it and the interview behind it, did I get exactly what was happening, because it's, I think, impossible to really capture from a translation. So I found it an interesting story because it was an okay story on its own, but it is also a sort of great lesson for just what translation can do and what it can't do.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have any knowledge of what translating from the Indonesian is even like, Indonesian to English. You know, I am really happy that more Indonesian fiction is coming into English. The collection Apple and Knife came out last year from Intan Paramedita from Indonesian, and you know, I didn't get a chance to read that yet, but I definitely want to know more, you know, about that tradition of storytelling and how people are, you know, finding these stories. And yeah, because it's not like, you know, I mean, Indonesian, I don't know how many people speak it, you know, but it's not like, you know, Chinese science fiction where, you know, it's got like millions of readers already and then...
And lots of people living throughout the world clamoring for it. And yeah.
Exactly. It's like Indonesian SF is, you know, whenever I come across something like that, I say, oh, you know, this is good. It's like when I come across, you know, Lithuanian SF, you know, I'm like, oh, we don't have a lot of that, you know. Let me look into that.
And so for listeners that don't know anything about this story, or if you haven't checked out the reviews up on the website that I wrote, the story is about letters, correspondences that show basically a love story between this alien and was... an AI? No, it's alien human. I'm sorry. Alien human correspondences, but the messages like kind of crash and are on this meteor that then you hear about some of those lost contents and see the story between them being built. And what is interesting here is apparently the original Indonesian has gender neutral terms. And so it becomes difficult to render those into English. And so the essay brings up the idea of using, you know, invented gender neutral terms as opposed to he and she or his and her, and the complications that arise when one does that, and choosing to go the route that the translator did, that Tony Pollard did for this particular story, is interesting to read about in the essay. But the fact that there is gender fluidity here doesn't become clear then until you get to the end of the story. And even then, it's not necessarily just in strict English going to be interpreted as gender fluidity as much as alien gender is not necessarily the same as human gender. And so it changes the story a lot through the translation. It doesn't make it any less good, I don't think. It just makes it different.
Yeah. There's some really great stuff out this month, isn't there?
Yeah. So that's it for the short fiction.
Well, I think we could quickly talk about some future stuff that we're looking forward to. I myself am looking forward to the collection from the Korean Flowers of Mold, which is coming out from Open Letter, which just, you know, always has excellent stuff. It seems to be a collection of surreal, surreal fantastical stories, of which there seems to be a lot more lately. Seems to be a big trend. And also Korean, speculative fiction seems to really be, hitting the world, taking the world by storm. So, looking forward to that. And of course, the last two books of The Legend of the Galactic Heroes, volumes 9 and 10 are coming out this year. I have read there. I'm reading all of them. So, it's, you know, and I've been, you know, reviewing them, and I hope to write kind of like a big wrap up thing once I've read all 10.
That's going to be epic.
It's going to be great. It's just this legendary Japanese space opera written in the 80s. And it is huge and just extremely popular in Japan. And there's an anime, there's the books, there's so much has been spawned off of it. But I'm really glad that we have the novels in English, all of them published by Hikasoro. Translators have been Daniel Huddleston, Matt Treveau, and Tyron Grillo, and they've all done a fantastic job. So I'm really looking forward to that. And you have some very interesting news about our good friend Francesco Verso, who we've talked about before.
Yes, I just got an email today from Luna Press Publishing. They may have announced it on their Twitter feed, and I just missed it earlier, or even Francesco may have. But in the email, it said they have now obtained English worldwide rights for his award-winning novel Bloodbusters, which won a Urania Mondadori Award back in 2009. And so the translation of that is planned for next year, so in 2020. So given I've heard such great things about Francesco's work from yourself and from others, and I have Next Human sitting on my shelf now, finally, to read, I was kind of thrilled to see that that was coming out soon as well. Something to look forward to.
You have to read Next Human. And
it's one of the contenders for a future course, so I'll get to it eventually soon.
Yes, and you know what I would recommend, if our listeners out there haven't read Next Human yet, and you want to read that, and you want to read Waste Tide by Chen Qiufan, which is, when is that coming out? That's coming out. Oh yeah, okay, it's out this month, April. Sorry, we're recording on April 1st. So anyway, the two are very, very different takes on the concept of waste, trash, recycling, one from an Italian writer, one from a Chinese writer. I just love international science fiction.
Different points of view.
They're coming from such different cultures, different reasons for addressing it. You know, Francesco does it from a transhuman perspective, kind of like a cyberpunk meets Frankenstein, whereas Chen Qiufan is coming at it from, toxic waste recycling on Silicon Island off the coast of China, and the people who harvest the rare metals from discarded cell phones and computers, but they do it by hand, and it's extremely toxic. But that's the only way that some of them can make a living. And so putting those two together, reading them together would be great. Fascinating. Yeah, I highly recommend reading those two together. If
another one to look forward to then soon.
Yeah. I'm halfway through Waste Tide, another Ken Liu translation. So, you know, it's going to be fantastic. Well, I'm really glad. I'm really, really happy for Francesco. This is his second book now in English. Anyway, you wanted to talk about books needing a translation home?
Yes. So I think we both are kind of curious, and you mentioned even earlier sort of how people find out about things potentially to translate from certain languages. And it would be, I know you have on the Speculative Fiction Translation website, a page of, you know, books looking for translation homes, of publishing homes or translations that have been done or things that are in process. But I'm also just kind of curious, due to the simple nature of publishing, it's really hard just finding out what's out there. And like, as a speaker of French myself, I can kind of like, occasionally I'll hear about things, but it frustrates me that there's not an easier way to just sort of like get on the radar of like, okay, these are the writers publishing in these languages. These are the works out there. If there's a reader that can read that language, finding out more information about them. And so I just, you know, think we should put out calls to whoever is out there to contact us about things that you might read in your own native language or a language that you speak or that you hear about that is noteworthy, or potential ways for us to get access to those to read or kind of fight for the idea of translations. I mean, you can, of course, do that for Italian works. I for French. We're more limited, obviously, with languages we don't speak to be able to judge suitability. But at the same time, there's people out there that can give us their thoughts. And I think it would be worthwhile to have more feelers out there, I think, because there seem to be a lot of people that we're learning are really interested in speculative fiction and translation. And a big step to getting that sort of more broadly available, I think, is just having a better hold on what is out there and what possibilities, and that there is a readership out there for them to be done.
Yeah, there, you know, it seems like I got connected to Clelia through Francesco because he had contacted me originally saying, you know, your site looks great. You know, I'm the editor of, you know, Future Fiction, and you know, just getting to know him and then just basically talking with people and them saying, oh, hey, you know, you're looking for someone to translate. Here's somebody I think is really great. There's some people who regularly, they have some venues that they just regularly read. You know, somehow they're able to get, you know, like maybe they're living in Spain, you know, and they just regularly read Spanish SF and then decide what they want to translate. And then sometimes a translator will be approached by a publisher. You know, do you want to translate this? But I think it's a good point. It's, you know, it's important to be able to find this stuff. I will say that I've actually seen on Facebook, there is a literary translators group, and I've seen people saying, how do I find this genre in this language? Like, what kinds of places should I look? Like, where do I look to find Italian crime that I could translate? You know, and so then people jump in. I mean, you know, social media, I must say, is a fabulous way to find out this kind of thing, because I went on to Facebook and Twitter and just was interested, is there anybody out there who can translate from Hebrew to Italian? I just put it out there, and I swear within a day, I got back two people who contacted me who could do it. And I got to those people because someone saw my tweet and texted their friend. And then I mean, it's just amazing what you can do on the internet. So, but I think that's a good point. And I think, yeah, the website, I mean, I would even be interested in starting another, you know, a little, a tab on the site of, you know, here's a place you can look for French SF, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that there's listeners, or that even you and I can sort of find others to keep that growing so that it can be a part of this as well, of where we kind of bring out things that probably deserve a home.
Yeah, I think that's great. It's a really good idea. There's so much to be done.
There is. And so to conclude, I guess it's a question of what's trying to catch up with everything, of getting it all done. What's in your reader's corner currently?
Yeah. So like I said, I'm reading Wastetide. I'm really enjoying it. I love Chen Qifan's short stories that have been featured in Invisible Planets and Broken Stars, the two anthologies from Tor, edited and translated by Ken Liu. So, Wastetide is different. It's a novel. You know, I'm used to Chen Qifan's short fiction, but I'm definitely enjoying this. And yeah, still translating that other story I've been talking about for weeks.
Oh yeah, ongoing. I understand.
One day I'll finish it. So, what about you?
Well, speaking of the French sci-fi, I'm still trying to get through Vestige, and I still feel horrible about it because I adore it. And so I'll just keep talking about how great it is until I can actually manage to finish it. It's just slow going for me in the original language, particularly during the semester. But as mentioned before, Mars is en route right now for me to read that collection by Asya Bakchik. And then in addition, we recently, a group of us from Skiffy and Fanti, did a podcast discussion for Reading Rangers on the Mexiconics Initiative collection that is available for free. And so we talked about that, and I plan on writing up a little review on stories from that as well. Many of the stories I mentioned in recent reviews of short fiction as well, because they were available for free online venues. It was a World Lit today that may have had them, I think, several ones from it. So there were a lot of great stories in that collection. So that is just something I want to highlight people to look out for.
That sounds good.
And then finally, the other, I was really excited to get find in my inbox an email from Toshiya Kamai, who we've mentioned many times for the many translations that he has provided in short fiction, particularly in online venues. And so he alerted me to the fact that Argentinian writer Laura Ponce has a short story in the current issue of Moon City Review. And so this is dystopian fiction in which, according to Toshiya's words, in which certain rights and freedoms are curtailed. So I always love me some dystopian fiction. And so he was kind enough to send me a copy of that so that I could read it. So I'll feature that in the April reviews as well.
Yeah, I looked for it in Moon City Review, but I didn't see it.
Did you go to their website?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I saw it on the website, but I don't think it's like available to read on the website.
Oh, okay.
I think it's an issue that it's just come out, and I think it's in print only, is my guess. And so currently, I think it's only available for in print. And so fortunately, he was able to provide me with a reader's copy. So more info on that to come.
Sounds great. Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's it.
All right. Well, to all our listeners, remember to send me any and all SFT-related news and links via Facebook, Twitter, or email, which is rachel@sfintranslation.com. Daniel, where can we find you?
You can find me curled up in the corner of the lab, usually bemoaning why the experiments aren't working. No. Similar. So you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and you can find me by email as well. Most likely the easiest is to spell is bacterialover, all one word, at hotmail.com.
I love it. Also, one more quick thing. I have a tab on the site about if you want to contribute to the website. If you want to write reviews, if you've got some flash SF in translation, you know, just all kinds of stuff I'm looking for. So if you want to do that, please send me an email. And Daniel and I will talk to you next month.
Happy reading.
Happy reading.
Thank you for listening to Speculative Fiction in Translation, a member of the Skiffy and Fanti Network, hosted by Rachel Cordasco and Daniel Hauser. If you would like to contact the Speculative Fiction in Translation podcast directly, please do so at rachel@sfintranslation.com, or you can visit sfintranslation.com. Additionally, you can find Rachel on Twitter at rcordas and Daniel at read1000lives. To find out more about the podcast on the Skiffy and Fanti Network, please visit us at skiffyandfanti.com. If you would like to support the network, you can do so at patreon.com/skiffyandfanti. To keep up to date on everything that is happening at the Skiffy and Fanti Network, please visit skiffyandfanti.com/newsletter. The music from this podcast is No Disclaimer by Jesse Spillane. To find more about this music, please visit freemusicarchive.org.